This is The Table Business, a Sounds Like Adventure podcast all about people doing great work in the tabletop world. On this show, we're going to speak to the independent creators who make the games that you and I love. I'm your host and the DM of Sounds Like Adventure, Jack Traynor. Hey there. It's another episode of The Table Business. It's me, Jack. How you going? So we're finally back. We've been gone for quite a few weeks, and I must apologize. We have had some craziness happening behind the scenes here. I've been going through some life circumstance stuff, but I'm back. I'm in the chair, and I have a ton of episodes coming up for you. We're going to jam-pack it and going to have a bunch of bonus episodes coming for you so we could catch up on some of these ones that we've missed. Because we've recorded a whole heap of interviews, and a bunch of people have been so, so patient waiting for these to come out. So we're going to make it happen. You're going to see a whole bunch of bonus episodes coming up soon. But hey, in the meantime, let's talk about what's happening in today's episode. And we've got a first. It's an exclusive. The first time I'm ever joined by another person whose name is Jack. Hey, I'm joined by Jack Kellum. He is the owner and proprietor of Gods and Game Masters, which is this amazing online offering of just great tips, tricks, material, anything that you could want to run better games in the tabletop world. And Jack has a real focus on world building. So we're going to dive into it today. We'll break down Jack's journey. We'll talk some tips and tricks for world building. And Jack is going to tell you the top mistakes that he sees new world builders make. Let's get into it. Jack, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So to start things out, you are the sole proprietor of Gods and Game Masters. So we'll dive into this deep throughout the conversation. So I guess just to start, in a few sentences, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and about Gods and Game Masters as well?
I've been gaming and running games for between 41 and 42 years because I first picked up the Moldvay basic set of Dungeons and Dragons in 1981 in a KB toy store in Louisiana. It said to my dad, hey, let's get this and we can play Tolkien as a family. Figured he would run the game, but I couldn't convince him to do it. So I ended up being a DM very early on. I was 8 years old. I have been a dungeon master and game master ever since for upwards of 40 different systems. But I had to make a list of all the games I've played and game mastered and the different settings I've DM'd because I just can't answer the question. it's too many. So yeah, there's a whole double list on the front of my website and it's not even complete.
So as I mentioned before, I was taking a look at the website. Really varied and impressive offering on the website. So much stuff on there. If there's a new person who's perhaps listening to this podcast and is like, oh, this sounds quite cool, I want to check it out. Where's a great place to start for that new person?
My biggest thing, I think, is world building. So you might want to start with my world building articles and my world building short articles, my world building shorts that you'll find on my YouTube. All of those give you what I think are very useful prompts and advice and insight on easy ways to build effective worlds for tabletop role playing. But if you are by nature, for instance, primarily a 5e player, maybe you just want to go to the 5e section of my website and start looking at the cool monsters or the pre-generated characters or the subclasses on there as well. I think the best subclass I've ever created is currently only available on my Patreon, which is a Path of Psychic Fury Barbarian.
Okay, can you tell us about that? That's an amazing tease that you've just done there.
That's for a setting that I created for my Patreon called Mosrab, which is it's kind of a post-apocalyptic world, but it's really was what was referred to as planetary romance. Books like John Carter of Mars or Jack Napier of Venus or that whole genre of book is what we're looking at. And basically, the idea is this is a world that is dying and there are this very strange races on it. They don't have your elves, dwarves, etc., right? But they do have humans because for some reason, several hundred years ago, humans just started waking up on this world after they supposedly died on ours. And even now, sometimes that happens. It happens much less often. So most humans are natives of this world. But every now and then, you'll get somebody from our world, modern day, who has just woken up on this planet, basically an isekai, and is wondering, how the heck did I get to this weird fantasy world where all of the magic is actually mental powers and psionics, and the monsters are exotic and strange, and they're not standard fantasy things at all. The path of path of psychic fury basically takes the ideas in the psychic warrior and the soul knife and morphs them into what happens if your psionics are powered by your rage.
So let's talk world building now. So I'm glad you mentioned it before, because it's on your Instagram page. You're listed as a world builder of exceptional skill. So I'm excited to dive in and talk about world building with you. So I think a great starting point for anyone who doesn't know, because this term gets thrown around quite a lot, what is world building?
It's a number of things. Fundamentally, it is the creation of the alternative setting. It's the things that make your world different from the real world we face every day. Even if you are functioning in an urban fantasy setting or it's the real world, but with magic, there's still world building involved, because you have to set up the rules by which the magic functions, the rules by which whatever secret societies function, all those. Every bit of that is world building. Like in my very first video about world building, I explain, start at the beginning. No, really, the beginning, by which I mean the beginning of time, maybe before that. Because for me, I don't always run it this way, but very often I'll go, okay, what's the creation myth? Or even, who are the gods? And then I'll figure out the creation myth based on who the gods I want to be are. And then once I have the gods and the creation myth, basically creating a world becomes, what would those gods have made? It's basically role-playing those gods and going, hey, this is how they would build the world. This is how the society would react to the commands they've given, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you have to come up with answers. You don't have to come up with answers to every little thing, obviously. And there's certainly levels of how much depth you need to go into. I'm a Tolkien-esque world builder. Not that all of my stuff is Tolkien style, but that I try to go that deep, that broad with my worlds, because you never know what little thing may come up that actually has an effect on the setting. And the deeper it is, even if this is the thing people don't seem to understand. They're like, only build what you need, only build what you need. Every little thing you build in a world adds to the depth and verisimilitude of that world if it all hangs together properly. Even if they never see it, it will have follow-on effects that they will see. You will understand what the world is doing. And if you're running a game in that world, improv becomes easy, because you know what the world will do. You know how the characters will react. You know, if you just throw it all together in isolation, you can get a fun game. Don't misunderstand me. You can absolutely have a fun, what I call popcorn game, without worrying about any of this stuff. But for me, the really evocative tabletop experiences, the really emotional ones, the ones that are transformative, the ones that are art, have to be broad and deep and feel like a living place.
Love that. That's a soundbite right there. Well done. So for people who are getting into world building for the first time, what are some common mistakes that you see people make?
I actually bring this up in some of my prompts. For instance, one of the common mistakes is they always go, well, we can't have guns because guns don't fit the time period and they're unrealistic. First of all, what time period? You're deciding what your tech level is, first of all. Second of all, do you have rapiers? Do you have full plate armor? Guns predate both of those by 200 years. In our world. They don't have to. You can have a world without them. And I've had this ongoing discussion online with people. But they had cannon in the 1300s. We got gunpowder in the West before the year 1300. The East had been using it for more than 1,000 years before that. So this simple guns don't fit medieval fantasy is nonsense. Tolkien's setting didn't have guns, but that wasn't medieval fantasy. That was prehistoric fantasy, and his technological level was Dark Ages. The heaviest armor they wore was chainmail.
Wow, there you go. So what do you think the mistake there is? Like, because obviously the mistake isn't guns can't go in my games. Is it like making assumptions?
Yes. it's getting this weird idea that worlds are always going to be a certain way, first of all, that fantasy has to be a certain thing, and that science doesn't mix with fantasy. And to which I have to point them, one of the most popular modules in first edition D&D specifically. So in the Gygax version of fantasy was an adventure, and I have the 5e conversion of it, called Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, about a crashed spaceship full of robots and laser guns that crashes in Greyhawk. One of the famous characters from Greyhawk is named Merlin. And when you look at him, he's a cowboy with a six-shooter. The genre has always been at least partially open to a mixture, right, of guns and tech and magic and all these other things. And there's nothing wrong with having a setting that doesn't have them. But don't try to tell anybody that it just doesn't fit. It may not fit in your world. But if you look at the actual technological advancement, it makes just as much sense to have it as not.
So, like, say I'm a new DM or GM and I'm about to make my first homebrew world and I've got a rough idea of what I want to do, what are the first questions I should be asking myself when I'm beginning that world-building journey?
Okay, first of all, if you are absolutely brand new, don't start world-building yet. Be ready to grab from wherever you need for your first few sessions until you get a feel for the game and feel for DMing. Run other people's modules, run other people's settings. When you do decide to start from scratch for your first campaign before you go deep into the world building pool, don't dive in on the deep end. As much as I will say to experienced game masters, hey, build all this stuff out. Here's these crazy questions I have for you. What I say to the first person is, one, have fun. Don't stress out. The people at your table are there to have fun with you. And if they're not, you shouldn't be playing with them. So just be chill. It shouldn't be a big deal. For your first game ever that you're actually going to build. Like, you've run a couple of modules and you're like, okay, I'm ready to start. For your first game ever, you need one thing. A settlement. In that settlement, you need a social hub. That social hub, if you are in fantasy, pre-industrial fantasy, that social hub is a tavern or an inn. Is this cliche? For a reason. Because in the real world, the inn or tavern or public house was the center of the community, and everyone would go there to get their news, and everyone would go there to get everything, and that's where visitors would come through, so that's where you would learn new things. And a lot of the time, one of two people would be the de facto mayor of the town, and that's either the innkeeper or the miller. So it makes perfect sense. New town, go to the tavern. They expect you there. They're getting news. You're getting news. That's where you'd go if you're looking for a job, because that's where people are going to go to look for people to give a job. Starting in a tavern is classic for a reason. Don't shy away from it just because it's been done. It also allows you to give the player characters a chance to interact a little bit before they go on an adventure. It gives you roleplay time. That same exact thing applies in science fiction. In cyberpunk, the local bar. Same thing, same reason. That's where you're going to meet your fixers. Go even further forward. Quarks on Deep Space Nine. The cantina in Mos Eisley. These are central to the stories. They are the beginning of the stories in all of them. In addition to that, you want your starting settlement. In that starting settlement, you're going to at least want the inn. You're almost certainly going to have one small religious place, if it is a small settlement. And I suggest that it should be for your first one. It's a lot easier than dealing with juggling a million balls at once when you try to do a whole full-on city. Because that gets complicated fast. But a little town, 500 people, you can literally write down the names of everyone who lives there ahead of time. So you can't get caught off guard when your players go, hey, what's the shepherd's name? Because you already know it. But you need a religious place there, because there will always be a religious place in any small settlement across human culture of some kind. And the thing to remember about that in most worlds is that it's going to be a religious place to the whole pantheon of gods. There's a weird thing they do in modern D&D, and that's, or a lot of fantasy, they like, there's this god, and it's opposed to that god, and you can't worship that god if you worship that. Okay, that's not how polytheism works. You might have a patron god who you follow above all others, but generally everybody follows all the gods, and you sacrifice to, say you're Norse, you sacrifice to Freya for fertility, for your babies, for your wife's well-being. You sacrifice to Thor for protection and also for fertility. You sacrifice to Odin for victory in war. So one area with a religious thing. And the final thing you need is a nearby adventure. Preferably a nearby adventure that actually threatens the settlement. Oh no, we found this crypt. Monsters are crawling out. Because then there's stakes and there's a time crunch. And you can do it with as many things as, okay, that you have that church there. Well, the church has ancient catacombs under it from long ago. And something has woken the dead. Go fix it. Something in the sewers has gone wrong. Go fix it. You're right there. You can get back out to your safe spot, which is important for low-level characters. And because it is central to the community, it's right there. It's something that has to be dealt with.
Yeah, I feel like that increases the world-building aspect because it centers the stakes around the community, which starts to make all of that, give the players an attachment to that and world.
If you're able to, you get all of the players to be in some way connected to that community. One or two of them should be from that community at the very least, right? Get them invested in the people.
Well, look, there's so much I want to talk to you about on this subject, but unfortunately we don't have all the time in the world. So I'm going to bring you back in the future, and I would love to, let's talk about world building from the character creation side of things. Cause I think that's an angle that people are not talking about, and you have just hit on it very well, but I'm not going to let you talk about it now. I can see you're about to jump in. So I always like to end these conversations with a couple of recurring questions. So first one, what's one thing that people don't realize about independent tabletop creators like yourself?
We don't actually make money. at the very beginning, especially, you're probably pouring more of your money and time into what you're making than you are potentially getting back. It takes a long time to build up and the odds are not good. The only reason I'm actually in the black now is because I'm a professional game master as well. If I was just creating content, I would not be. The independent creators are putting their heart and soul into this thing and they're not getting a whole lot of financial reward. So we understand if you guys don't have money too. But be nice. Be kind. It's rough. You know, what is the quote? Be careful because you're walking on my dreams.
Yes, I very much relate. And then second question, what was your first ever character in a tabletop game?
Okay. Oh, all right. It's a little embarrassing. I'm going to tell you about the first and the second real quick. The first one, may he rest in peace. He was smashed by an ogre outside the Cave of the Unknown near Keep on the Borderlands. He was an elf because that was a class back then. His name was Legolas Greenleaf. But he looked like Cutter from ElfQuest and rode a wolf.
Go on.
He got smashed by an ogre outside the cavern of the unknown. And then the second one I can clearly remember is a first edition AD&D character who I, you know, cleverly named Travis Morgan, which is the warlord from DC Comics. he was killed by giant frogs at the moat house outside the village of Hamlet.
Yes. What was the character? Like the character, not just how they died.
Oh, he was a fighter.
Yeah.
He was straight up a fighter, sword and shield guy.
Yeah. What's your first most memorable character then? The one that you think back and you're like, oh yeah, I really loved this one.
Oh, the most memorable character is actually one from an epic level handbook game in 3.5. His name is Melros the Hellbringer. We started out high powered because that was the kind of game we wanted to run. He is a sun elf half devil necromancer. His mother had two other children, both his sisters, but they each had different fathers. So one of his sisters was a half celestial and the other one was a half demon. And we got together and we were evil and we decided we were going to take over the world. We actually took over several. We were in epic levels. It was like 28th level effectively back then. Nowadays, I do have a version of him up on the website as a 20th level BBEG type character with the art, right? That I, the one piece of art I've ever done that was any good is a representation of him. But yeah, Melros the Hellbringer, he is now the Infernal Duke of Undeath, the Herald of Avernus.
Sounds awesome and sounds like there's some more to see on the website. And then final question. When you look back at your time spent around the table over the years, over the many years, do you have a favorite story that comes to mind?
Oh, God.
There must be so many, right?
A favorite story? That's really hard when you're looking at 41 years of this. I'd have to say one of the early ones that really still sticks with me is, for some blasted reason, we were all sleep deprived and I was running, like we ran for 3 days or so and I was running the Marvel phase rip system and the whole group thought it was the best superhero game they'd ever been in. And then days later, we could barely remember what we'd done because we hadn't slept. But they still all remembered it as the best session ever. I'm like, well, I guess that's good.
Yeah, no, that counts, I feel like. Wonderful. Well, Jack, thanks for joining me today on the show. If there's anyone who's interested in finding out more about what you're up to, where can they find you?
All over the place. I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter. I'm on Instagram and Threads as Jack Cogsbane _. If you look up Of Gods and Game Masters on the internet, I'm literally the only thing that pops up on Google.
Awesome. Well, lots of ways to get in touch and all of that's going to be in the show notes. So if any of that interests you, check it out there. And of course, we'll be posting as well about our chat on Instagram. So you'll be able to follow your notes from our Instagram channel over to the Gods and Game Masters stuff. But Jack, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
You've been listening to The Table Business, a Sounds Like Adventure podcast all about people doing great work in the tabletop world. If you'd like to know more about anything we spoke about today, all the links for all the people that we spoke to are available in the show notes. Or head over to soundslike_pod on Instagram and we'll definitely be talking about them there. And if you liked what you heard, why not check out Sounds Like Adventure? That's our main show. It's an actual play podcast with fun roleplay, short runtimes, and great sound design. But to make sure you don't miss the next episode of The Table Business, make sure you subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And a 5-star review really, really helps to get a few more people to see the show. And we hear it, Sounds Like Adventure. We would be so grateful if you took the time to do that. All right, with all that in mind, we'll catch you for the next episode of The Table Business.